I've been
Okie dokie, folks,
country.
And welcome back to the Backbreaker Media Network. My name is Kyle Shaw. You're listening to Monday Night Shaw right here on the Backbreaker Media Network. I am also known as the Canadian Goose, and joining me today on the show, all the way from Mexico, it's my good friend, Sweet Daddy Soul. Sweet Daddy, how are you doing, brother?
I'm doing great, Kyle. It's nice to hear your voice, man. I know we don't get too many opportunities to chat these days with everything we're dealing with, man. But you know, it's great to hear your voice again.
Yeah, like I mean, there's a lot going on. I'll be totally honest. Like even when you message me because you messaged me like, hey, when are we doing the podcast? I thought we had already done one because there's a couple of guys like you and Cameron and Vince Austin who are just dudes that once in a while I will like just I'll message you or we'll start a video call or a chat or like an audio call and we'll just bullshit for like an hour, you know?
Yeah, so, exactly.
Like I probably just was like, oh, I've already done one with him because, you know, we bullshitted for an hour and I assumed it was all recorded. And
yeah, no doubt. Touché.
So how's things going?
Yeah, man, things are pretty good, you know, considering the circumstances. You know, just staying busy, man. Things are a little bit different down here than they are up there, of course. They've kind of reopened things down here, so like you know, bars and restaurants, stuff like that, patios, they're all open. The markets and stuff like that's a really big thing here. Those are completely packed. I mean, on actually just earlier today I was out at the market going to pick up a few things and yeah, man, just lots of people, really lively, a lot of music playing, a lot of laughing and dancing going on. You know, it was really nice, man.
Well, I mean, you only live once, right? So might as well have a good time.
Absolutely.
If COVID is going to wipe out the entire human race, well, let's go out in a blaze of glory, I guess, you know. Has there been wrestling shows going on there?
Yeah, you know, for the last like month, just basically you'll see a couple like streamed events kind of pop up where there's no fans and, you know, they did the show, you know, maybe a few days prior, you know, recorded it and then, you know, posted it or whatever a few days later. That sort of thing's been going on here for like the last month. I mean, the last show that I did was it was like the third week of January, the 24th or something like that. I can't actually remember the day, but it was a private function because that's all we could kind of do. And it was for a young man's birthday. And there was about like 60, 70 people there. But like, as far as I know, like there has been no shows in the entire country itself since early January.
Oh, wow. That's got to be a pretty wild birthday present. Can you imagine if you're a kid and your dad like hires a wrestling federation to come put on a show for you and your buddies?
You know, it's kind of funny, but the son was actually a son of a luchador. So, you know, so it actually, you know, it makes it a lot easier when, you know, he works at that building mostly and, you know, a lot of his friends kind of know him really well and his son. So they wanted to put on, you know, something special for him. And there were some other people that were obviously invited with the fact that there was a show going to be going on. So it was pretty cool.
Yeah, no, that sounds awesome. I'd definitely take a birthday party booking for sure.
For sure. There, it's actually not the first one I've ever done. Believe it or not. I think they're probably a little bit more common than most people might think, but like in Winnipeg, we're going like 3.5 years back now. I did a show in the summertime that I had two shows on the same day. It was actually an evening show for Hotshot Danny Duggan, CWE, okay. At Rookies, which is where they kind of hold like their consistent shows every week. And that was in the nighttime. And then I went to basically this like cabinet shop, and it was ran kind of in conjunction with a few guys from PCW. And yeah, it was just a birthday party in the back of like a cabinet shop. And it was pretty cool. I ended up getting, you know, got the butts kicked out of us. And I do believe my trainer AJ Sanchez was there, and my training mate Dragneel. And yeah, it was tons of fun, man. I remember, you know, we were doing the bad guy thing, and we ended up like driving away in a car, like with our gear on, and me getting beat up and tossed out of the ring, and yelling at everybody as we were driving away. It was pretty funny. We got a few texts after we drove away. It was like, yeah, that was funny when you guys just hopped in a car and got out of here. It was hilarious.
Did anybody get slammed on the birthday cake or anything?
No, I don't recall anything like that happening. But one of the guys or whatever got pie faced, I think, at the birthday party here at that show in January. I remember seeing something like that. But they actually, what was really cool, excuse me, to come back to Mexico here, but. The show they had here, they, of course, Mexican tradition, the piñata, right? Okay. So they whipped out like a big giant luchador and kind of like hung him next to like where the top rope was, so kids could kind of like get up and like kind of stand on the apron and hit or whatever. Yeah. Yeah, they had the piñata and everything come out, and everybody was beating the crap out of it and having a good time. So yeah, that was kind of funny to watch.
That's awesome. I mean, it kind of reminds me of like, remember that show that we did for RCW that was in the industrial barn with the dirt floor and stuff?
Oh, for sure. I'll never forget that show. Never.
So
that
fun.
Was in, what was the name of the town again?
Like it started it was, with an O. It was like Onway.
Owen.
Something like that, yeah.
It was like Oyen or Oyen. Yeah, that was great, man. I was like, man, where are the horses and the cowboys at, man? I thought somebody's just gonna come running out of nowhere and get a little rodeo. Like, yeah, that was so cool.
Yeah,
I just remember fighting around on the dirt on the outside and like getting back after you, like sand in your ears and everything. It was great.
There was a lot of kids there too. Didn't you wrestle Squig on that show?
Oh, I did. Oh man, that was a rough little match. I mean, we kind of beat the crap out of each other. I remember Squig, he threw a garbage bin over my head, and I remember I can't remember what I hit him with, but I remember hitting him with something. And yeah, that was what we call a cluster FU something K. But anyway.
That's like one of my favorite shows I've ever been a part of. Like, I was only announcing that night, but when I showed up at the building and there was a dirt floor in the ring, so I was like, oh, now we're doing some independent wrestling, boys. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. I remember the six-man tag and just like all the kids kind of coming in the ring there afterwards and you know, doing the whole celebration with us and stuff. And yeah, that was super cool. I mean, one of the most unique venues, obviously, you or me or I think anybody could have ever wrestled in. It was just super super interesting.
Yeah, it's cool where wrestling takes you. And I mean, that was an awesome place that wrestling took us both, but wrestling's taking you like all over the place, man. Like, you've been Winnipeg, Newfoundland, Mexico. You're just in Puerto Rico. Have you done BC yet?
Yeah, I did a show for Marty Big West Wrestling a couple years ago. They have this thing called K-Days in Rutland, just a part of Kelowna there. So I did like a two-day kind of like, you know, a fair show. There's like, you know, rides and stuff like that, kids, cotton candy, all that fun stuff. So yeah, it was tons of fun, man. I actually played semi-professional football in Kelowna too, so that was a really cool thing to kind of go back there. The Okanagan Sun, I played there. I played quarterback there, starting quarterback there in 2011 season. Yeah, man, had a nice little career over there. So it was really really sweet to go back and be able to kind of perform in front of a couple teammates that I used to play football with out there.
That's awesome, brother. Where would you say is your favorite place that wrestling has taken you so far?
Oh, man. Well, you know, I've definitely been lucky to go to quite a few places in my short little career so far. But I think for now, you know, Mexico's been pretty amazing. I just went to Puerto Rico. I'll be going back pretty shortly. And that was a great place too, but obviously Mexico is, it's changed my life, you know. I've built a new life in a new country, you know, learning a new language entirely. And, I can't say enough about the experience. I mean, we'd have to do an entire podcast for an hour of me just talking about Mexico because so much has happened in the 10 months that I've lived here. And it's been wild, man. Just so much interesting, cool that's happened and all these amazing different experiences. And I mean, there's obviously highs and lows, especially with the COVID. And even those, like, I look at them like, man, this is cool. It's different than what I've ever experienced in my life prior. Definitely Mexico would be my answer for you.
That's awesome. What about, like, as far as, like, the actual, like, wrestling shows? Can you describe sort of, like, what would be the difference between doing a show in, like, Alberta or doing a show in, like, Mexico?
Wow. Man, there's a lot of differences, for sure. The fans, I would say, are definitely more passionate. And I don't mean that, like, Canadian fans aren't. What I mean is, like, I mean, grandma will take her shoe off and throw it at you, you know. Like, yeah. They're right into it, very aggressive to your face, like if you're rudos and stuff like that. So, I mean, definitely a different type of energy, especially in the kids. Wow, they're really into it, really, really into it. So, you know, it's culture here, kind of like what hockey is to Canadians, is what lucha libre is to Mexicanos.
Oh, wow.
So, that's kind of like what I would say for comparison, you know, at least based on my personal experience.
So, would there be like a Wayne Gretzky of Lucha Libre?
Absolutely. That would be El Santo.
Okay. Have you had a chance to meet him or?
Well, actually, El Santo's passed away, but he was the first. No worries. Not a lot of people know about Lucha Libre history that are from Canada. And, like, basically, I didn't, of course, either. And El Santo, so basically he was, like, the first, like, well-known luchador that donned the mask. And, you know, his mask that got, like, silver and white, kind of. I say silver based on some pictures I saw, but people tell me mostly it was a white mask. But the classic lucha mask you see was kind of based off him. So that's kind of like their Wayne Gretzky, El Santo. And his mask is sold everywhere. His action figure is sold everywhere. He did, I don't know if I could say hundreds, but pretty close to, as far as movies, cinemas. He was a very, very well-known figure in Mexican culture. And still is to this day, obviously. It you know, bleeds into everything that is Lucha Libre.
Right on, bud. I have heard that you've had the opportunity to train and be around some pretty notable names, though, that are down there.
Yeah. So basically, I started out training with Ricky Marvin, and he's really well known for his time in Pro Wrestling Noah in Japan. He had some really amazing matches with Kenta, Hideo Itami, as he was known as in, you know, NXT.
Yeah,
Kenta and a lot of other great wrestlers that were in Pro Wrestling Noah.
Has he wrestled with Prince Devitt a lot?
You know, I don't know for sure. That's a good question. I'd have to ask him about that. I would imagine they've crossed paths, though. He's wrestled so many different people. Like, man, Ricky's been all over the world, and, you know, he's very, very highly respected by his peers. And training with him, you know, he's got a very well-rounded, or I guess from my perspective, because I don't know a lot about lucha, but I know a little bit about, you know, when I've been training in Canada, and he brings this other Japanese stuff that they do, Japanese arm drags, different things that he's referred to with that name that I've gotten to learn about, and just different things with timing and footwork. You know, he's very particular about that sort of stuff and psychology, just how to structure a finish. Like, it's just so many different things that, like, Ricky goes into detail about. He's a really amazing trainer, and I've been able to learn a ton from him so far, and I'm really grateful for just getting to know him, and he's helped me with a couple things outside of the ring too, to find a place and stuff like that too. So Ricky's a great guy, and if anybody is in the area of him holding a seminar, definitely, you know, you got to check it out, because he's really amazing. Sky Day, he's really well known around the world. He's an amazing trainer. He's, man, so many innovative different keys and locks and movements that I've never seen before. El Maestro Sky Day on YouTube. I mean, if you want to see some of the stuff that he does,
I've heard
just incredible.
I've heard of Skyda for sure. I think he's done some stuff with Mike Quackenbush in Jakara. That's probably where
yes,
I saw
absolutely.
Him. And
yes, he did.
It's
yes.
just like wild, amazing stuff where you're like, well, I've never seen that before. And then he does four more things I've never seen.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So those two guys have been pretty instrumental in the bulk of my training here. Sky is also, he's a really funny guy too. He's got a great sense of humor. He keeps the classes very upbeat. And one thing I really enjoy about going to train with him is just how good the energy is in the room when we're training with Sky Day. He just, you know, he's very supportive, but he also knows, you know, how to kind of like joke around with you and kind of make you feel like you're part of a family. And he kind of held a speech not long ago in front of the whole class where he talked about loyalty and stuff like that. And, you know, being good to each other. And he's just, you know, really great person too. And that's the other thing, you know, like we go and we train with some people and stuff. We have to remember, like, these are also life moments too, not just wrestling moments. Like, there's a lot of tools that you can learn from various people that can help you with your life. You know what I mean? Not just what goes on in the ring too. So both Ricky and Skyday equally, you know, just great human beings as well as being great teachers in the ring, you know. I think it would be appropriate for me to mention Australian Suicide, although I've never actually trained with him per se. We've got to wrestle each other now, which is that was a really amazing experience, but he's been really instrumental in helping me learn the language, where to go, different gyms that I can go train at, helping me just like with my matches and stuff. So he's been really great. He also made his debut not long ago on AEW Dark in a match with Sammy Guevara and in a tag match prior to that. But if anybody watches AEW, definitely check out that match, Sammy Guevara versus the Australian, El Australiano. But yeah, I have so much respect for the guy. He's become a really great friend, and yeah, I can't say enough good stuff about him. He's just he's a really cool cat.
That's awesome. I think I heard that he came up here, or I don't know if he actually did, or if there was plans for him to come up and be a part of some of Heart Legacy wrestling shows.
Yeah, so 2019, January, it was a couple months before I got hurt there. He came up and he did a show with Jack Evans and Teddy Hart. And it was that Heart Legacy first reboot show. And then there was a second one. He was on that one too. Mm-hmm. So he came up and did a couple there for Heart Legacy Wrestling. And then he was supposed to come last year on the show that I was on for them.
Yeah.
But I think there was some type of commitment that he had with AAA at the time. So he couldn't make it.
Oh, okay. It seemed like that last Heart Legacy show was a little wonky anyway. Didn't you end up refereeing a midget match?
Yeah, I refereed the match between Short Sleeve Samson and I really apologize. I don't remember the other guy's name, but it was fun, man. I had a good time in there with little Short Sleeve Samson. It was the first time I had met him, but you know, just the comedy, I guess, if you will, back and forth was enjoyable. He ended up winning that match and, got to know him throughout the weekend and stuff. And he's a pretty entertaining fellow.
Short Sleeve Samson, he's the fella from the Midget Warrior Wrestling, right?
Absolutely. Yes, that's him.
I got a message from him on Instagram one time saying, hey, do you want to come and work for the Midget Wrestling Warrior League?
And yeah.
I was like, yeah, like, sure. When is it? And like, you know, what's going on? And he told me it was in the States and whatnot. So I said, oh, well, like with the COVID going on right now, I probably can't get over the border. And then he said, like, well, wait a minute, how tall are you? And I was like, yeah, I'm like 5'9", dude. I'm not a midget or a little person. And he was like, oh, I thought you were. And I was
what? Yeah,
I was like, no. Oh, okay. Well, I said I've wrestled a midget, you know, so because me and Big Bruce have had a few matches, and
Big Bruce.
Yeah. So, but that was cool when I just got that little chime from him out of the blue. I met him at a RCW show too. I do like the little guys. I think they're really entertaining to watch.
Absolutely. I really enjoyed reffing his match. I actually reffed the match the next night too.
Yeah, that was weird. They didn't have any referees.
Hey, you know what? This is what I'll say. I showed up in Calgary, and I remember Stacey Angel, the promoter, asked me if I could help her with a few things. I said, sure. It ended up being the ring was stuck in a shed. The ring had to get out of the shed. The ring had to go in a truck. Well, that truck didn't move so well because there was a massive snowbank that it just for about an hour and a half. So there's some fun little situations that occurred with that. And, we dragged the ring to the venue, me and a guy who goes by the name of Darwin, which was he was great because he kept everything real lighthearted because it was a stressful job. But, you know, I loaded the ring. I unloaded the ring, set up the ring, unloaded the ring – or, sorry, you know, put the ring back in the truck, drove it up to the reserve that we had the show on the next night, and I drove it back, and then I unloaded the ring into – Miss Angel's garage, and I can tell you this, I was paid very handsomely, and I would do it all over again for the price that I was paid. Well, so we'll leave it at that.
I'm glad to hear that for sure. So it's good to get paid. You did end up wrestling on that show too, right?
Yes. So I wrestled and I reffed basically all the other matches. I wrestled, his name is Mandope.
Okay.
He kind of has like a rap gimmick. And he's wrestled out of San Jose, and basically he's done some time in Mexico, but you know, with the COVID thing, he did not come back. He's back next week, but like, I think he was gone for 6 months and then, you know, came back for a little bit, went back again. So he's kind of had like a back and forth situation between here and San Jose. But yeah, Mandope.
All right, Mandope. I'm just like, his promos have to be gold, right?
You know what, man? He's pretty new and stuff. I haven't seen any of his promos, but
he would fit right in one of the soul sessions.
Oh, I'm sure he would. You know, he's a pretty cool dude. He went to the Storm Academy as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was there in the January 2019 class that I went back for like, I guess I was there for about 4 weeks, 4.5 weeks until I kind of pulled out because got the diagnosis for celiac disease, and I was having a few issues with that at the time. So I couldn't really maintain training during the week and then doing the shows on the weekend. You know, it was a weird dynamic. And then of course, you know, I stopped going to Storm and, you know, I'm still doing the shows or whatever, but you know, I got seriously hurt there.
Yeah, I remember
shortly that. After that.
That was a bummer for sure.
Yeah, it was tough. Yeah.
Let's just go back to the beginning though. You started off in Winnipeg, right? And were trained by
yes.
AJ Sanchez.
Yeah, I was trained by AJ Sanchez and him and his brother's garage, man. It was awesome. it was actually awesome. Like, I mean, I know a lot of people have nowadays, like, you know, you got the training centers and stuff like that, right? Mm-hmm. But in Winnipeg, there was never really like, there's always, you know, I shouldn't say that, never really, but once in a while, there'd be a place where you could train and then, you know, that would end. And then, you know, maybe a little bit later, there would be. Fortunately, now they do have a facility. AJ's still doing some training out there. AJ's an awesome trainer. He's a great guy. AJ Sanchez.
Yeah, I had him on the podcast here. I think he was on Jericho's podcast on Friday, and then on Monday he was on mine.
Yeah, that's right too. I remember something like that. But yeah, so I trained with AJ. Started out in his garage, and that was great. I trained with Dragneel. He was my training mate there for most of those sessions.
Okay.
And then we kind of evolved into this facility that they started running some shows out of there shortly after. But Danny Duggan, Adam Knight, Tyler Colton, Colly Mentolo. There's a few other guys I'm forgetting, but they would come down, most of those guys, and kind of help out once in a while, or you know, jump in the ring with us. AJ ran the training, but you know, we'd always have guys coming in, so it was always really helpful, right? And that was good. You know, that would happen like, you know, a couple times a week, I guess, for a few months. So I kind of had like, I guess, combined maybe about 3-4 months training before I had my first match, and that was in April of 2016.
Right on. And who did you wrestle in your first match?
I was in, basically they called it the Outlaw Challenge. So Adam Knight, he had Dragneel, my training mate. He came out first. He was in there for about 4 minutes. I came out. I was in there for about maybe 5-6. And then they had another guy come out by the name of the Misfit, Mike Mission. And then it kind of, I think it resulted in like a DQ from there. But, you know, Adam Knight obviously cleaned up on my training mate and myself, and then had more of like a hard-hitting affair with Mike Mission that ended in a DQ.
Oh, okay. So it was like a gauntlet match type thing.
Yeah, they called it the Outlaw Challenge.
Awesome. So,
yeah.
Did you do any time as a referee before you were a wrestler?
Yes, I did. I did. Basically, when I started my training, AJ had me go do a referee job for PCW, and I reffed a match that was between Adam Knight and Moses Luke. And yeah, man, that was an amazing experience. You know, that was my first time kind of in a locker room and stuff too, right? So listening to the guys put their matches together and just kind of like being really animated about what they're going to do out there and stuff like that. Like I got really, really into that. So I tried to just digest as much as I could about what else was going to go on the show. But of course, you know, I had my own job, so I was pretty damn nervous about that as it was. I was like, man, I'm going to mess up. Like, I hope, you know, like my counts are proper, you know, like all that stuff. I was so nervous, you know, and I'm like that with most things too. Like, I may go out there and play like a really chill and relaxed type dude, but in life I'm freaking out all the time about stuff. So like totally. So like in that moment of like going out there to ref this match, I was just like, you know, ready to piss my pants realistically. Luckily I didn't, you know, manage to get through it without that happening. But
so how much time did you spend wrestling out in Winnipeg before you ended up moving out here to Alberta?
Basically like a full year. I had some injury time in there. April to November 1st, basically, my debut to that that day in my first year. That was the allotted time that I had my first year, basically. Because after that, I sat out for, I think, about 4 months, 5 months.
And was it not like for this first about first year of your career, you wrestled under a different name before you adopted your Sweet Daddy Soul gimmick, right?
Yeah, I wrestled under Jeremy Joseph, which I still kind of use. I used it in Puerto Rico, basically, along with Sweet Daddy Soul. But yeah, it's just my name, basically. I have a different last name. It's just a given name. I'm named after three saints, Jeremiah, Peter, and Joseph. So that's where I started out with, was just using Jeremy Joseph. Just something basic, you know, before I kind of figure out what I was or what I was trying to be, you know?
Yeah. And then when that all came together, like, was that all like your brainchild?
Not really. Basically, I've always kind of been in a state of evolution in my life. you know, I started out going through some things psychologically when I was younger. I used to have sleepwalking issues. So basically, I'd have like these out of body experiences, and you know. You call them like hallucinations, I guess would be the best term for it, right?
Yeah, that's got to be terrifying.
Yeah, so it was. There was a time where I basically did like a tope suicido, you know, over the top rope, but to the ground of my basement stairs from the top of the stairs, which was basically 22 steps.
Oh.
So I was like 11 years old when that happened, and I kept having these issues and stuff. And, you know, this soul thing, you know, having like these out of body experiences, it was a word that was kind of like into me at that age when I was having some issues, kind of trying to figure it out, you know, give what I mean? Like, what was happening to me in these moments? Why was I waking up and it felt like, you know, I'd be like 1,000 times zoomed out, you know, sitting in my bed, and, yeah, you know, I would be all of a sudden I'd be in the kitchen drinking milk, or I'd be in the shower. I could see myself from like the ceiling of the shower, like almost like the term is astral projection. So it'd just be very weird things that I would experience. And this went on from like the age of 3 until I was basically 15. And it ended one day when I was 15 in actually in Calgary. And it was in the winter, and it was a very bad episode where I had almost jumped through a window in the middle of the night. It was just crazy. But anyways, the word soul was kind of given to me by a psychologist that I had seen to kind of help me figure out what the heck was going on. And as I got older and stuff, I, you know, kind of stayed attached to that word in a lot of ways. And my daughter, who came into my life luckily when I was 19, she would call me her sweet daddy. Oh. All the time. So that was always something that was kind of like a silly joke, you know what I mean, between me and my daughter, you know, oh, sweet daddy, my sweet daddy, you know, she would just say that. And I did this ceremony in 2017. It was in June. I had a friend of mine approached me to do a ceremony with shamans, and it was a very, very life-changing
ayahuasca thing or something.
Yeah, basically. And it was a very life-changing experience. I know a lot of people are big on listening to Joe Rogan, and Joe Rogan talks about ayahuasca.
Yeah,
and
that's where I heard,
you know, it. Yeah, it was a really, really amazing experience. You know, basically, if I could dumb it down to what it was in a minute, you know, you are in a circle full of people, and this is not always the same setting, but, you know, there's about a circle of 15 people. Mm-hmm. There was the shaman, and then there was a woman next to him, And basically the ceremony would start with music, with natural music, you know, drums and stuff like that. Some stuff he would get from his phone, some stuff he would play, some stuff he sang. It was very beautiful. And it was also in an art gallery too, so it was really cool. But basically everybody gets to take turns to go up to the shaman and take a sip of ayahuasca. It's a very bitter kind of earthy taste. It makes you want to throw up.
Yeah.
I've heard you
generally will throw up, but you also have.
Yes, absolutely.
Perspective changes.
Right. So you go back and you sit down for about, I'd say for me, it was about 45 minutes. And the music's playing, you know, very spiritual jungle type music, right? Mm-hmm. I kind of got lost, you know, just in my mind. I started to experience certain things, see certain things, different thought processes, you know, striking through your mind, you know, like a million miles a second. And then things would kind of slow down. I felt like throwing up. I didn't. You know, a lot of people around me were, and some crying or, you know, having a struggle. Basically, for me, I felt like I was in a seizure, a baby seizure almost for a couple hours. Ooh. And throughout that couple hours, you know, some of the things that were shown to me were, I would assume, to be about what's going on in the world. I don't want to get into too much detail because some of it was really graphic, and I don't think that's... Yeah,
and it's also, it's a pretty personal experience, I would imagine.
Yeah. But it was like, whoa, you know, like it would kind of take you back a little bit, some of the stuff that, you know, was being revealed or shown to me, whether it was, you know, all in a base human hallucination or not, you know. It was very, very interesting. There was a point where, like, I was kind of like, you know, experiencing like this moment that I was like, I was in the stars or something like that. And then I came right back down to earth, and I was just basically kind of in the setting that I was in, except for everything was different. Like, there was a woman sitting in the middle of the room, in the middle of the circle, and she was basically singing music, and there was a fire right in front of her. And it was amazing because it connected to the man, the shaman's voice and his woman's voice. It kind of connected to what that was kind of being projected to me in my mind and in that experience. So it was very serenading, you know, very peaceful. Obviously the seizuring was a little, debilitating and worrisome, but once you got used to it, you know, it just kind of felt like, you know, maybe you're shivering as opposed to seizuring after a while.
I've only had a seizure once. And
you've had a seizure?
I was told I had one because I was it was one day I was out in the garage. I was smoking some marijuana with my a friend of mine, and my stepdad was there. And just at a certain point, I like sort of passed out and fell out of my chair. And when I came to, they were like, "What the fuck, Kyle? You just had a seizure."
No. Oh, my God.
And I was like, I don't know what's going on. Like, it was like 1 second I was sitting there smoking a bowl, and the next I was on the ground going, what happened?
No.
Yeah, it was a long time ago, and it hasn't happened again since. So I'm not super concerned about it.
Okay, good. Yeah. Good.
But it definitely, like, I imagine it was probably a little bit frightening, but also, like, it sounds to me like this had a tangible effect on your actual, like, mindset towards, like, the world and how to operate yourself and whatnot.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, it just kind of set me on the path that I'm on right now in many ways. I think one thing that happened to me immediately after that was just, what am I doing? You know, like... That was like the instant thought, like, what am I doing, you know, with my life, in a sense, because I was about to go for surgery on my left shoulder. And I had sat out of wrestling for, geez, however long it was. I think I had a few matches, like maybe a few months prior, but it was still part of that, like, first year in Winnipeg experience, and I was still out from an injury. So I think, yeah, surgery came like a month and a half later, but basically, you know, a lot of things changed. My body changed, you know, my mind changed. I started to kind of understand some things that were going on around me that maybe weren't the best for me. So I knew I had to make some changes with that. And, you know, I only wanted what was best for my daughter. And I knew that, I had some things I had to work out. So, it was good that her mom was kind of in a state of being ready to kind of do some more things than maybe I could for our daughter. And then I was able to leave Winnipeg and, move to Calgary reluctantly. And, you know, my daughter's still there and she's doing great and her mom's doing great. And I couldn't be happier. It's definitely, you know, shaped my life into what I've been trying to do anyway. But, you know, that ayahuasca experience definitely was a good kick in the butt and a reality check in many ways.
So
for sure.
Once you got here to Alberta, did you immediately join up with RCW, or did you have any, did you do any other matches with different companies other than RCW?
Well, basically, I ended up having my first match back in RCW because I kind of played tag going back and forth between Calgary and Winnipeg most of my life. And originally I was supposed to start training with Squig in Edmonton. So I had done some shows prior when I first started. Like my first weekend in wrestling was my birthday, basically. And I went to Calgary on a little 3-day tour when Squig would do Red Deer, Edmonton, and Calgary, when he used to do that. So I had some experience before, but basically 2 months prior to me coming out to Calgary in 2018 there, I made my debut as Sweet Daddy Soul in Winnipeg. And I had a lot of plans to kind of take that into that direction, because the ayahuasca experience is what actually gave me the name. It's there was a moment in the experience where I was watching The Ultimate Warrior as if he was like kind of like in a cartoon, like just like drawn out cartoon, but like maybe like it's in a comic book, like kind of like that visual.
Yeah, did you ever see the Ultimate Warrior comic book where like Santa Claus looks like he's been like accosted and he's like,
no, I've never seen this.
It's like it's a weird Ultimate Warrior comic book, and it's like there's a Christmas page and Santa Claus is laying there on the ground and it looks like he's just been like raped or something. It's really bizarre.
That sounds very strange. As strange as that sounds, seeing Ultimate Warrior kind of like running through the galaxy is probably even stranger. And that's something that popped up in my ayahuasca experience. So when I was seeing that, that's kind of where the whole piecing Sweet Daddy Soul together came. And when I walked out of the ayahuasca experience, that was basically the one thing that I kind of clung on to from the experience. Was like, that's a sweet name. I'm going to use that. And then I kind of went forward and used it. And 2 months before I came out to Alberta, I debuted it and sang my Eyes of the Stranger song for the first time. And I remember all 50 people in Thunder Bay liked it so much, some of them sang it with me and asked me, or basically I asked the crowd if they wanted me to sing it again, and I did my entrance twice for them. And I was like, man, you know what, if I can make, you know, these 50, 60 some odd people enjoy it that much, that they all wanted pictures with me after, with Colt Cabana in the photo, because he was part of the show. I was like, you know what, maybe I'm doing something, maybe this is going to work, you know, maybe this is something that's right for me. So I tried to just keep rolling with it, right? And it's stuck with me, and I feel like it's worked. I've kind of figured out some different ways to use it. But when I came to Calgary, it was like, all right, I'm going to give it everything I got, because I know the Calgary crowd is not an easy one. It can be a tough crowd.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and they like the bad guys too.
Definitely, for sure.
I love your entrance music though, and your entrance and whatnot. Like, cause I've announced you countless times probably to the ring, and me and you, we've even wrestled each other a couple of times. And
yes,
even though you're my opponent, your music bumps. So I'll stand there and I'll dance anyway. I don't care.
Like, yeah, no. I mean, I'm just all about having a good time, right? So I'm always trying to figure out new ways to, you know, project that and you know, give the people that experience when I'm out there. So I'm glad that you enjoy it too, though, because I know some people, you know, with my antics out there, sometimes I got to bring people out of their character a little bit, and they always give me some shit for it.
Well, you know, I'm all about having a good time and having fun too. So I don't think anybody is going to get on my case about, you know, doing.
Yeah, I feel you for sure.
I love it, man. And you joined up and you became a big part of Dirty Ink.
Yeah, man. That was when I first came out there. Me and Dano were working together, and then I paired up with Mike Jones, and then Cameron kind of came. Cameron Stevens came into the mix a couple months later. Me and Mike didn't really do too much stuff. We did a MexiFest show where he managed me, and then I want to say there was, you know, maybe a couple shows in Edmonton, but it wasn't until Cameron came around where then we were kind of like, you know, we were Dirty Ink, right? Yeah, that was fun, man. We had some really, really fun times. I remember the match that we had with NVR, where it was Gunner taking the place of Vince in that one. Vince wasn't there for that one. It was Hawks and Gunner. And I just remember the Calgary fans, you know, just being so wild that night. And I think, yeah, that was the night that I did two dives over the rope, and one of them I almost ended up on the top of my head on a chair. It was pretty nice. Yeah, that was a pretty crazy show. And Mike was a great manager.
For some
of the stuff that he did with us. You know, in and out of the ring guys, there. Man.
Like I miss Hawk. I miss Gunnar. I miss you. I miss Mike Jones. I haven't seen in a while. You brought up Dano Burns. I love Dano.
Yeah. Well, Dano Burns, are you for real? You know, he used to say that. Are you for real?
He was one of my favorite people. I hope he comes back one day and that I get a chance to like get in the ring with him.
Absolutely. He was a lot of fun, man. He was a lot of fun. I used to hang out with him and Merc at their place right next to downtown all the time. And that was always a blast, man, hanging out with those guys. And it would just be watching wrestling or watching sports, mostly sports. You know, and it was always a good time and just tons of laughs. And, yeah, man, miss them all, man, for sure, just like you.
100%, bud. So I guess you had a big major moment when you eventually you won like the RCW version of the Money in the Bank and were able to cash that in and take home the gold from Andrew Hawk and become the RCW heavyweight champion. Had you ever been the heavyweight champion of any, like the major champion of any other federations before?
No, it's also the only title I've ever held so far.
I would have swore were a tag champ with Cameron. I would have swore.
No, I wasn't. We just, you know, we worked together for quite a while. But yeah, unfortunately we never captured the titles, brother. Yeah, so that was the only time I've held a title so far.
And how did it feel to win the title and stuff?
Yeah, no, that was a great experience, man. Geez, you know, the fans in Edmonton and Calgary are awesome. That night we were in Edmonton, and you know, just the reception that the fans gave me was something I'll never forget that, right? It was a really cool moment. You know, a lot of the people kind of knew what was happening when my music hit. And I wasn't sure because, you know, the storyline, I don't think gave them enough information as the way the storyline went. I don't think it gave them enough information. I still had the briefcase. So, and that's on the performer always, right? You know, we got to make sure that we're telling the right story. Yeah. and telling a good story so that people can understand what's happening. And, you know, it was a great moment. I remember Eddie Rude came down, and I got a lot of love for Eddie Rude. You know, I got to know him while, you know, he was in RCW, and he was a really cool guy.
Yeah,
He came down and celebrated. Yeah, he's a great dude. He came down and celebrated in the ring, and he was a part of it too. And I'll never forget that. I still got pictures. One that's I have on my phone here still, of me and him. And you know, it was just such a great moment, man. I don't know. It's also I always get a great laugh out of this, but when you're holding up the WCW Silver Heavyweight title, brother. I mean, like, it's always just such an awesome rib. And I just look at it and I just laugh at myself every time. I'm just like, holy fuck.
It was definitely a choice to swap out the belt for that old classic silver version of the big gold there. Got the big silver.
I'm like, every time I see the photo, I'm just like, look at this freaking goof and genie pants thing. See, he's fucking WCW champion. What a joke. Oh my god.
Such lineage. But you know what? Ric Flair.
The RWCW championship. So yeah, no, it was great though. Obviously, to hoist that belt, it was like, man, this is a sweet belt.
You know? It was a cool looking belt for sure.
Yeah. But no, man, that was awesome. Like I said, something I'll never forget. It's just one of those things where in wrestling, you always got to be moving forward, right? So I think whenever you hold a championship, you always got to keep it in perspective. Like, you know, tell your stories, man. Tell your stories. Enjoy your stories. You know, give something to the people that they can really, like, clamor onto, man. You know, if you can deliver, you know, a story to someone that can, like, touch them, like, their heart, like, deeply. I mean, imagine how you can affect them. I mean, you look at how many people – you know, they show up to wrestling and it's just like, you know, the highlight of their week, you know, or their month or their day or their year. And, you know, they whatever money they have, they're going to scrounge up to go to wrestling, you know? So I'm always of the mindset of, well, whatever I can do to give a great story, man, like that's what I'm passionate about. So,
yeah. I mean, It is one of those things. Like wrestling is a lot of fun, and just like you say, there's so many ways you can tell those stories. One thing I did want to ask you about before we have to get off here, because you've been wrestling in Mexico and Puerto Rico, and you know I've never done that sort of thing where you have to wrestle folks that don't necessarily speak English. So, are you when you're you know, so typically like in Alberta, I'll show up at a show and 98% of the time I'll you know, approach the person I'm wrestling and be like, hey man, what do you want to do tonight? And then we'll sort of come up with the match, right? You know, once in a while you'll come up and they'll be like, oh, I'll see you out there in the ring. And then, you know, it's a veteran guy and you just go and you do it on the fly. Is that more so the style that you would have to do in Mexico? Like when you show up, do you go and you plan out your match, or is it more so like you just listen and go with it while you're out there?
Well, basically, you know, if you're working with somebody that doesn't speak the same language, regardless of where you are, whether it's Mexico or not, right? What I've learned is, you know, wrestling's a universal language. There's various movements that you just kind of got to get down when it comes to lucha in order to kind of go out there and dance. Because if you, you know, take your American footwork and technique and stuff to lucha, it's transferable, but there's certain things that you have to understand when it comes to lucha. Certain rules just don't apply like they do in American style.
Yeah, I can give a little, like, an example.
You work both. You can, yeah, like, you can work both sides. You know, like, you can work both arms. You can work both legs. You know, you can whip from either side of the body. You know, you want to throw a guy to that side of the ring. Like, you don't got to stand on his right side or on his left all the time. You know, like, you can do things differently. How you pick a guy up from the ground, to me, generally, is by the head, you know, in American style. Or, you know, you grab a guy by the arm or whatever, bring him up. But, like, rolling guys up by their legs and stuff like that, that's been something new for me. Mm-hmm. To kind of get used to, like, you know, you got a guy's right foot and you, like, jump between his legs and over his body to the right and twist him and roll him right up to his feet. Yeah. And if you're really good at that technique, you can get a guy right to his feet, no problem.
We did, without his help. We did one where you run and you'll tackle the guy and then you grab his foot.
Yep.
And then you just, you, like, take his foot and then you walk to back behind his head, right? And then you just kind of roll him up to his feet, and then you can whip him off the rope.
Yeah.
Leapfrog over top of him or whatever, you know?
Right. So I've learned, I guess there's about four ways that I've learned and how to do that differently. So that's kind of where, okay, there's a big difference there with things. And basically how that kind of all applies is, like, different spots, they're going to do some of these movements to you. And if you don't know them, you know, might be a little difficult time out there. But once you know that stuff, it becomes a little bit easier to communicate. Like, there's a couple of guys that I've trained with where we can just start, you know, boom, lock up, do stuff, bam. And I can just kind of read their body and I already know what they're doing, and they can read my body and they know what I'm doing. And I've gone in there and had, like, 10, 12 minute matches with people without calling a damn thing.
Oh, wow.
We'll just keep kicking out of stuff. Yeah, and it's just, if you can get to that point of communication, you know what I mean, and understand where you're at in a match, like, you know, if you're going to go out there and you, you know, you don't want to call a bunch of stuff, like, that's fine. But, like, obviously when you go to training and you train together and you get to know each other and then you get on a show together, you're going to have stuff to go in there with.
Yeah.
You know? So, like, going and training with other people and stuff, like, you know, when you're not at the events and when you're not, you know, in a training class with, say, a Skyde or a Ricky Marvin, you're just going in there with each other, just working on stuff. Eventually you're going to get booked. And when it comes down to the way matches are structured here, six man tags, typically what you're going to be in, you're not going to see too many singles matches.
Oh, okay.
So if you get in there with somebody and you got to work together and you've already trained and done stuff together, gee. Yeah. I mean, you got a lot of room to have a lot of fun and just, you know, go out there and kill it. So doing that is,
like, not only that, but you also, like, for me, at least sometimes when I'm wrestling somebody like that I've never been in the ring with, I'm a little nervous. Like, well, how's this going to go? You know, is this person going to be kind of stiff? Is it going to be real loose? You know, do they know what they're doing? Are they, you know, is there going to be a problem? Like, there's, you know, so, like, you have to adapt and whatnot. But, like, I can only imagine, like, because, like, all the training I've done, most of my training partners are from, you know, other wrestling companies and stuff, right?
Yeah.
So I don't get the opportunity to get in there with the guys that I train with very often. I think the only time I did was at the clandestine show when me and Sydney did a bunch of stuff. But,
right.
You know, it was all pre-worked out beforehand. But it's nice because, like, even after I have wrestled with somebody on shows a couple of times, like you start to get a feel for them and what to expect. So,
well, the thing is down here, like when it comes to training, like when you are in a training class, that's a little different. It's one thing to kind of go to the side and go and work with a few guys and do some stuff. But when you are in there with, say, like Sky Day's class, and you know, you don't speak the language completely. Like I understand a lot. I speak a lot, but I'm not going to say I'm 100% fluent. Like, you know, I'll say maybe 75, which I think is probably pretty good for being here for 10 months.
Yeah. No kidding.
But,
I know like 3 words in Spanish.
Yeah. No, I think I'm probably up around 500. And most people say, well, if you know about 500 words, you're fluent. And it's like, well, you know, when people have different accents and stuff and you're still getting the hang of that, that to me tells me that I still got a long way to go. So basically, Sky Day's class can be, it was a lot tougher in the beginning, but like now it's a little bit easier because I've heard the words and stuff from him enough. So I know what he's saying, but you got to watch, you know, that's all you can do is just watch what the guys that are first are doing. Now, don't get stuck watching the guys that are fourth or fifth, because if you do, they're probably not doing it all correctly. So, you know, attention to detail is super important when you don't speak the language in your training or learning or communicating in any way. You know, when you forget stuff, obviously it looks bad, you know, but you got to do your best. But down here, spots. And you are going to have to memorize all of those spots. And when you get into training with Sky Day and he does about 20 movements in a spot, it's like, holy shit, I got to memorize that. Woohoo! I got 30 seconds. Here we go. So, you know, it's a test, man. And it really like it tests your ability to remember things, and your memory gets really put to the test. And you know, obviously you get anxious. You want to go in there and do good. You only get to get so many reps. There's a lot of people that show up to class, right? And I've just done my best to pay attention, to try to communicate in the language the best I can. But it's been a challenge, man. When you can't be told by words on how to critique or fix things, and you just got to go by feeling. And hopefully somebody might speak a little bit of Spanish, English. Yeah. But I can tell you this, most classes I attend, there is no English speaking people.
Oh, wow.
So, and it was always like that. That's just the way it is, you know? And I know Sky Day knows a fair bit of English, but this is Mexico. You're going to learn Spanish, young man. And I totally respect and understand that. And like, for me, for them to kind of push me more in some ways to kind of get the language, I really appreciate it because I really enjoy a challenge. So and like I'm going to accept any challenge that comes my way.
That's the good thing about like wrestling and stuff too, is like it is a community. Like you're not on your own out there. You know, those guys are going to help you because, you know, that's just what we do for each other, you know? So
yes.
Awesome, yes. Awesome, brother. Let's get your social media plugs in here as we wrap up.
Yeah, man, for sure. Sweet Daddy Soul on IG, Instagram. So my Facebook page, it's Sweet Daddy Soul. And then my Facebook, basically, that I use for messaging and posting various things that may not be about wrestling, that's Jeremiah Peter Joseph.
Okay. Do you have the Twitter?
No Twitter. I like to keep my blabbing to a minimum. I don't play with Twitter. I think it's one of those platforms where I'm probably not going to make my way over to.
There's a lot of negativity, all
the other ones
there, for sure. Like even Facebook has a lot of negativity, but I love Instagram
for sure. Yeah. See, I do too, man. I love photos. I love being able to go and turn on something and I get sports highlights or wrestling highlights. It's like, oh, sweet. You know, just scroll.
Do you have a pro wrestling tee store?
Yes, I do. Sweet Daddy Soul on pro wrestling tees as well. But I will say this, if you do want a t-shirt from me, messaging me directly,
I got about 5 different designs right now. So if you want a t-shirt, you definitely get the better price from just messaging me directly as opposed to going on Pro Wrestling Tees.
100%. And just a quick reminder, I also have Pro Wrestling Tees. If you search for the Canadian Goose on Pro Wrestling Tees, you'll find some t-shirts there. So check those
awesome.
Out.
Awesome.
And Sweet Daddy, I really hope that once things start to clear up and whatnot, we get you back up here and we get to you know, cross paths again.
Hey, man, absolutely. It's great talking to you, man. You stay safe. You stay in touch.
Okie dokie, folks. Thank you very much for tuning into Monday Night Shaw this week. And hopefully we'll have some more action going for you next week. Got a lot of podcasts being recorded and stuff. So there's lots of content to come your way. And the run